ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद्भागवतम् Canto 10, Chapter 22, Text 4, Translation and Commentary by Disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Katyayani Maha Maye Maha Yogini Adhishvari Nanda Gopa Sutam Devi Patim Me Kuru Te Namaha Iti Mantram Japantyaha Taha Pujam Chakruhu Kumarikaha Katyayani Mahamaye Mahayogin Yadhishvari Nandagopa Sutang Devi Patim Me Kurute Namaha Iti mantram japantyastha Pujam chakru kumarikaha Katyayani mahamaye Mahayogin yadhishvari Nandagopa sutang devi Patim me kurute namaha Iti mantram japantyastha Pujam chakru kumarikaha Translation of the verse. Each of the young unmarried girls performed her worship, which means the worship of Katyayani, while chanting the following mantra. O goddess Katyayani, O great potency of the Lord, O possessor of great mystic power and mighty controller of all, please make the son of Nanda Maharaj my husband. I offer my obeisances unto you. Purport. According to various acharyas, the goddess Durga mentioned in this verse is not the illusory energy of Krishna called Maya, but rather the internal potency of the Lord known as Yoga Maya. The distinction between the internal and external or illusory potency of the Lord is described in the Narada Pancharatra in the conversation between Shruti and Vidya. Janatyeka parakantam Shaiva Durga Tadatmika Yapara Parama Shaktya Mahavishnu Swarupini Yasyavigyana Matrena Paranam Paramatmanaha Muhurta Deva Devasya Pratir Bhavati Nanyatha Eke Yang Prema Sarvasvasva Bhava Gokuleshvari Anayasu Labhognyaya Adi Devo Kileshvaraha Asya Avarika Shakti Mahamaya Kileshvari Yaya Mugdam Jagat Sarvam Sarvadeha Bhimaninaha. The Lord's inferior potency, known as Durga, is dedicated to His loving service. Being the Lord's potency, this inferior energy is none different from Him. There is another superior potency whose form is on the same spiritual level as that of God Himself. Simply by scientifically understanding this supreme potency, one can immediately achieve the supreme soul of all souls, who is the Lord of all lords. There is no other process to achieve Him. That supreme potency of the Lord is known as Gokuleshwari, the goddess of Gokul. Her nature is to be completely absorbed in love of God, and through her one can easily obtain the primeval God, the Lord of all that be. This internal potency of the Lord has a covering potency known as Mahamaya, who rules the material world. In fact, she bewilders the entire universe, and thus everyone within the universe falsely identifies himself with the material body. That's the end of that translation. Continuing the purport, from the above we can understand that the internal and external, or superior and inferior potencies of the Supreme Lord are personified as Yoga Maya and Mahamaya, respectively. The name Durga is sometimes used to refer to the internal superior potency, as stated in the Pancharatra. In all mantras used to worship Krishna, the presiding deity is known as Durga. Thus, in the transcendental sound vibrations glorifying and worshipping the Absolute Truth, Krishna, the presiding deity of the particular mantra or hymn, is called Durga. The name Durga therefore refers also to that personality who functions as the internal potency of the Lord and who is thus on the platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure transcendental existence. This internal potency is understood to be Krishna's sister, known also as Ekanangsha or Subhadra. This is the Durga who was worshipped by the gopis in Vrindavan. Several acharyas have pointed out that ordinary people are sometimes bewildered and think that the names Mahamaya and Durga refer exclusively to the external potency of the Lord. Even if we accept hypothetically that the gopis were worshipping the external Maya, there is no fault on their part, since in their pastimes of loving Krishna, they were acting as ordinary members of society. Srila Prabhupada comments in this regard. The Vaishnavas generally do not worship any demigods. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has strictly forbidden all worship of the demigods for anyone who wants to advance in pure devotional service. Yet the gopis, who are beyond compare in their affection for Krishna, were seen to worship Durga. The worshippers of demigods also sometimes mention that the gopis also worship goddess Durga. But we must understand the purpose of the gopis. Generally, people worship goddess Durga for some material benediction. Here, the gopis could adopt any means to satisfy or serve Krishna. That was the super excellent characteristic of the gopis. They worship goddess Durga completely for 1 month in order to have Krishna as their husband. Every day they prayed for Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, to become their husband. End of quote. The conclusion is that a sincere devotee of Krishna will never imagine any material quality to exist in the transcendental gopis, who are the most exalted devotees of the Lord. The only motivation in all their activities was simply to love and satisfy Krishna. And if we foolishly consider their activities to be mundane in any way, it will be impossible for us to understand Krishna consciousness. It's coughing season. Everyone like to cough. Have a good cough now and try not to cough for the rest of the class. This can be your Katyayani Vrata. It's very austere. Just as the weather's getting colder, to only take Havishyana as described in the previous verse, or a verse just previous to that. Just very plain food. Gopis did this, performed this vrata, this vow, for the sake of getting Krishna as their husband. And this chapter is titled Krishna Steals the Gopis' Garments. So in that way, Krishna fulfilled their desire by having the gopis appear naked before him and completely fulfilled their desires by dancing with them in the Rasa Leela, which was celebrated last night. So I might think, well, this is out of order because we had Rasa Leela, or Krishna had Rasa Leela last night, Krishna and the gopis, or we supposed to celebrate that. And now we're reading about how the gopis are performing austerities so that they could intimately associate with him as his wives. But it's not out of order. If we take from our perspective, we follow throughout the year various festivals and observances, and the Katyayani Vrata begins today. We don't do that, but we remember that the gopis do it. Certain of the gopis, the unmarried gopis, Kumarikaha. And it was later, at the end of the year, that they got to dance with Krishna. So it's not out of order, but it's just after many years, 5,000 years or so. But for them, it's only 1 year. This verse was always chanted. I always used to still hear it in Dubai, where there are now many thousands of followers of Srila Prabhupada. That's an Arabic emirate, but the followers of Srila Prabhupada are almost exclusively from Hindu backgrounds, mostly from India and Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, and so on. So all that preaching there was practically founded by Mahamani Krishna Das, who's passed away now. And he always liked to chant this at the end of his programs. I never asked him why. I presume he had some attraction toward worshipping Durga before he came to the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. He was a smarta by background. And being connected, Tamil smarta being connected to that Kamakshi mutt in Kanchipuram. So Kamakshi is another name for Durga. So we might think that this is a way in which we can dovetail the widespread Hindu predilection for worshipping demigods. They can chant mantras like this. Of course, please put off your phones. The gopis, they weren't exactly worshipping a demigod, they were worshipping the internal potency of the Lord. They didn't know that. How was that? They didn't know? They didn't know they were worshipping. They weren't philosophers. They just wanted to get Krishna as their husband, that's all. They didn't know any internal potency, external potency. Their pastimes, the pastimes of Krishna, go on in a world in which no one's doing sadhana for the sake of attaining love of Krishna or love of God. It's different to our situation, or different to the situation in which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this land, in which he came as a devotee and taught us how to perform devotion to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada is quoted in this purport, paraphrasing Narottam Das, who twice in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika states, Anya deva shray nai tomare kahinu bhai, e bhakti parama karan. He says that not taking shelter of any demigod I tell you, brother, this is the prime cause for getting bhakti. So I may say, well, the gopis, they worship demigods, but their whole outlook is different. Particularly they worship Katyayani, with a very austere vow to bathe early in the morning in the Yamuna, which is cold, very cold, even to go out at that time of year. In that weather, it's very cold, and taking not very nourished, not very heating food. But they did this for the sake of getting Krishna as their husband. They didn't think Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They just lived as what we nowadays call Hindu. Of course, the word Hindu hadn't been formulated or come into existence at that time. But all girls in the Vedic culture, they would worship Katyayani and Shiva to get a good husband. Yeah, so they did that. They already fully in love with Krishna, so they didn't have to, or they didn't chant rounds or get up for Mangal Arati or any such thing, so that they could develop love of Krishna. But they're already completely in love of Krishna. Whereas the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Srila Prabhupada is quoted here as saying, the Vaishnavas generally do not worship any demigods. Although, he also states that people generally worship Durga for some material benediction. Here the gopis could adopt any means to serve Krishna. And that was shown in this very, it's a very famous pastime of Krishna's. He's known as the thief of the clothes of the gopis. So they could do anything to satisfy Krishna. Of course, in the modern age, for a young girl to expose her body is considered a very normal thing. Human rights gives them the right to do that, and even apart from gross pornography, it's considered very normal in many countries of the world, especially in the what we call the Western world, for women to expose part of their body all the time. In Vedic culture, and practically most cultures throughout the world, that is socially taboo. So for the gopis to fully expose their whole body before Krishna, they could adopt any means to satisfy him. And this is practically unthinkable. Even the gopis, they weren't thinking about it. They didn't think at the end of the month we're going to show ourselves to Krishna. They weren't expecting that. Krishna had a plan to see if the gopi, if you really want, then you come before me like this. And they did that. They weren't prepared for that. They were how they were to submit themselves to Krishna. A wife is to submit herself to the husband. They weren't prepared. They didn't have any warning that Krishna was going to do this. But faced with that, and they expressed reluctance to do so as they were shivering in the river. But they did, and Krishna was very satisfied. And he later danced with them for a whole night of Brahma. Last night, the night was as long as the night of Brahma. You may not have noticed. And still they weren't satisfied, because their love for Krishna is such that they never want to stop dancing with him, being with him. But that is part of Krishna's Leela also, that there's variety. There is joining together, sambhog, and vipralamba, again separating, and then again coming together. And each time, the devotees of Krishna who have not seen Krishna, when they see him again, it's as if they're seeing him for the first time after a very, very long time. And it feels like that to them, because for them, a moment, nimish, blinking of the eyes, nimish means blinking of the eyes. So that feels to them like a very, very, very long time that we couldn't see Krishna. Now, this is the love for Krishna that the gopis, they are the exemplars of. Ramya kachid upasana Rajavadhu Vargena Ya Kalpita Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to demonstrate, or in his teachings, that the love of the gopis, that is the ideal, that is the highest of all forms of worship of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught Vaishnavism. Before him, there had been Ramanuja and Madhvacharya, great Vaishnava Acharyas. And concurrent with him was Vallabhacharya, who expounded the Pushti Marg, which Rupa Goswami says is very similar with, practically identical to the Raganuga Marg of the Gauriya Vaishnavas. But particularly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed in this world, which the pastimes which are not understood otherwise, they have to be understood through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is the Bharaja Jubatiya Bhavera Bhakati, the love of the young girls of Vrindavan, their feeling for love for Krishna. And only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could do that. Bhavera Bhakati Shokati Hoitoka. Only Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could do that. And following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are many great acharyas. Narottam Das Thakur is quoted here as he has strictly forbidden all worship of the demigods for anyone who wants to advance in pure devotional service. So this is the statement in Bhagavad Gita Krishna makes again and again. Ananyas chintayanto mam. For instance, one example of him saying, only unto me. Ananya cheta satatam yomam smarati nityashaha. Again and again he says, to me only, thinking of me only. Manmana bhava, the famous statement, manmana, this means thinking of me. Srila Prabhupada translates this, always think of me. To exclusive devotion, which has various names, ekantiki bhakti, naishtihi bhakti, only concentrated on Krishna. Now again, we learn from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. He taught achintya-chintabhid-tattva from the, as given in Vedanta Sutra, shakti-shakti-matiya-abheda. The possessor of potency and the potency are in one sense non-different. So Krishna doesn't mean Krishna alone. Krishna means with his energies, especially Radha Krishna. Shri Krishna. Shri Krishna means Radha and Krishna. So to fully understand Krishna, we have to understand Radha. Understand that Krishna, he feels, although he is complete and perfect, he feels himself incomplete without Radha. And Radha means, of course, she is his internal potency in technical terms. Although Krishna doesn't we don't find in the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes that Krishna says, I'm longing to see the beautiful face of my internal potency. He doesn't treat her like that, just like a man doesn't treat his wife like a legal entity. But we are to understand this philosophically. But she expands herself into so many forms. First of all, 8 principal gopis. And of course there are other gopis in another group altogether, but mostly the Gaurya Vaishnavas are not supposed to talk about them, who appear to be rivals. And then there are so many. They're all shaktis. They're all in it. Technically, they're not shaktis of Krishna, shaktis of Radha, expansions of her. And then there are the expansions of Krishna and his energies into the external potency. And then we get Durga. Very difficult to get out of this Durg. Durga means a fort. So we're in this fort, we're in this prison. Very difficult to get out of. Here in Bengal, West Bengal especially, is probably the most widespread and sophisticated religious worship of the material energy. Of course, everyone everywhere is worshipping the material energy. The worship, they may not exactly consider it worship, but here specifically, all over India, but and throughout the world, people say that, well, there are so many different religions in the world. But no, actually, everyone is worshipping various manifestations of Krishna and his energies. He manifests in different ways. The atheists like to say, if someone says, I believe in God, which God do you believe in? And they'll say, do you believe in Zeus or Jupiter or Thor or Allah? They think there are many different gods, but these are all different ways in which Krishna has manifested himself throughout the world in different places and different cultures. And there's worship of the goddess is also very widespread in cultures all over the world. So we understand that there are various forms of Durga, various manifestations of the material energy. And here in West Bengal in particular, the worship of Durga is going on in full swing. It's been widespread all over India, but particularly got a boost in West Bengal some, not very long, but 150 years, something like that, when this Durga Puja, which used to be a home worship, people used to do it at home, someone, I can't remember his name, he decided to, let's do it in public, and then it became a public and a festival, and you know all about it if you've been to Calcutta during Durga Puja. So it's openly worshipping the material energy with the idea that we will get benedictions from her so we can live very nicely in this world. It's not spiritual at all. There's no... There may be something which worshippers of Durga consider to be spiritual when they get into the tantra side. But that's not really spiritual. That's calling up the lower energies, the mystic potencies, which are used for manipulating the material energy. There's no idea of going out of this material world. And they worship Durga as being very beautiful, very beautiful form of Durga. Of course, they don't know that the beauty of Durga is only a reflection of the beauty of Radharani. They're attracted by the beauty of this material energy. They want to enjoy this material world, and it all may seem very pleasant at Durga Puja, families and communities all dressed up in new clothes and giving each other sweets and killing goats. It's all family fun, eating goat's meat. It all seems very nice, but the nature of the material energy is that it's not very nice. There are various, it must degrade. We may think, well, we're living very nicely, but everything will degrade. And the very violent forces of the material energy. Durga herself, she rides on a lion and has weapons in her hand, which are meant for killing the asuras. And who are the asuras? Those who worship her. They don't realize. Mother. This mother, her duty, as given by the Supreme Lord, Srishti Stiti Pralai. She does it as the shadow potency of the Supreme Lord. She kills. We may say, well, Pralai, all right, that's a long time away. Long time away, the pralaya, the annihilation. In the meantime, we'll go on worshipping Durga and we'll get all the dhanam dehi, rupavati bharya dehi, all these things. Money, beautiful wife. But the pralaya goes on. That's described. There are different kinds of annihilation. It's not just at the end of there's the end of the universe, the end of the life of Brahma. There's at the end of the day of Brahma. There's at the end of everyone's life. It's all going to be destroyed, whatever we get from Durga. And at every moment it's going on. So the real annihilation that we're looking for is to pray to the spiritual energy to annihilate our connection with this material world so that we can come out of it and go to Krishna. So it's a great mistake to think that this material world is very beautiful and worship Durga. We can praise, make right poetry about the sun rising in the morning and how nice everything is. Everything can be very nice, but all of a sudden it can turn to a completely hellish situation. As many people in, for instance, Syria at the present time are experiencing. They were going about their day-to-day life, like most people in the world, getting up in the morning, going to work, sending their kids off to school, and all of a sudden, they found themselves in the middle of a completely hellish situation. In East Bengal also, in the 1970, 1971, it was a completely hellish situation, completely swept the whole country. And again, it came to a fairly peaceful situation. But we can't expect peace for very long in this world. The other face of Durga will be seen. After Durga Puja comes, well, there's Lakshmi Puja, and then Kali Puja. Kali Puja comes. The fierce, ferocious form. She's not even trying to look beautiful. She's distinctly horrible. Gaura Rupa. Horrible looking form, which is most popular among the Bengalis. They like that form. So that's that worship of the terrible form. That also we see right here in this temple. Nrsimha is another terrible form. Of course, one is completely spiritual and the other is completely material. Worship of Kali to protect us in this material world and to sustain us amid a very unfavorable situation. So many enemies, so many envious people all around. So Nrsimhadev, he fulfills that function. Well, we shouldn't say like that, but from the point of view of a materialistic worshipper, what do I get? What do I get? I'll worship this god and that god. If we worship Durga, we worship all the gods because they're all under her. There's even a Devi Bhagavat, some imagined Shastra, in which it's stated that she, Durga, is the source of all the gods, including Vishnu. It's all the stories of the Bhagavatam, but just all twisted around to make it seem as if she is supreme. Bengalis in West Bengal, they're mostly attached to worshipping the horrible form of Kali. So let them worship Nrsimhadev. Let them, they like to worship this fierce form. So let them be attracted to this form. He's, even though he looks very fierce, he is very fierce. He is very fierce. But he's very, just like the lioness is very kind to her cubs. So he's very kind to his devotees. And actually this Nrsimhadev here, I think you can all say better than me, he appears very fierce, but he is here worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he leads others to his very soft heart. And we see all around Mayapur, are written on people's cars and motorcycles, mostly in Bengali, Jai Nrsimhadev. That's a fashion in India. It's going on from their religious culture, that they put on their car the name is a Hari Om or Hari Krishna. Something like this. Or Allahu Akbar, whatever it is. Jesus saves, things like that. They have to put something religious. So I'm seeing around this Mayapur area, you see written on motorbike, Joy Nrsimhadev. It's written like that. So people like to worship demigod, they like to worship Kali, then they can come and worship Nrsimhadev. They can be attracted to him. Instead of being attracted to worship of demigods, which will only continue their misfortune. People don't understand. They think traditionally the Shaktas, the worship of the external energy, they criticize the Vaishnavas. We see that even in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Shaktas of Navadvipa, they would criticize the Vaishnavas. They say, well, you people are completely stupid. You're worshipping Vishnu and you don't have anything. And we're worshipping the mother and we got everything. We're very wealthy, we have nice houses, we have nice wives, nice family, and you're just all beggars. You know, what's the point? Why are you so stupid? Why are you worshipping the Vishnu? You should worship the mother. Or the Vaishnavas will amend you. How do you argue with such people? How do you argue? Their values are completely different. And you say, if you tell them that, well, you have to die, then we'll die and then we'll get born again and we'll enjoy again. That's their idea. If we worship mother, she'll give us another good birth in future. So what are we worried about? You can't avoid death. You see, you say you worship Vishnu, you have to die also. So it just makes sense. You see, it's pratyaksha praman. We can see directly that you're in a useless situation. We're doing very well. How can you argue with such? You can't say to people who are attached to bhogaishvarya prasaktanam, and therefore they have aparita chaitasam. Their heart is their consciousness is disconnected from their heart. They have a disconnect. They don't realize what's their actual benefit. So similarly, this whole story of Krishna stealing the gopis' garments, we don't talk much about that. How are we going to explain it to materialistic people? They can't even begin to understand it, and therefore they make some. Hindus who are trying to defend Krishna, They'll try to explain it allegorically. You have to appear naked before God. This Prabhupada, when he denounced this, when this proposition was put, what is this nonsense? It's not an allegory, it's a fact. The gopis appeared nakedly before Krishna. So it's not something that can be understood unless one has great faith in Krishna, unless one has understood the external energy, the internal energy, the nature of Krishna's pastimes. It's a very confidential subject. Now, therefore, it's not discussed very much, as it's highly likely to be misunderstood. So today, at the beginning of this Katyayani Vrata, this pastime is being recalled. This is actually the highest, Gopi Leela. Gopis, how they completely gave themselves to Krishna. But that is the essence that we can adopt. The Sharanagati, Atmanikshepa, Atmanivedan, completely giving ourselves to Krishna. But we shall have to understand how to do so through the teachings of our acharyas, who are mostly gopis, Rupa Goswami, who gave us directions in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu on how to practice Krishna consciousness. In our situation, he's also a gopi. He doesn't tell us to go around naked. That's not for us. You have to understand very carefully what we have to do in our situation to follow in the footsteps of the gopis. Doesn't mean to imitate them, but to glorify the ideal of their complete surrender to Krishna. I'm almost out of time here. Are there any questions or comments? Please make them now. Anyway, yes, please. Need a microphone? No, is there a...
I don't need a microphone, but the audience...
Well, for the recording, I think I'm going on the internet, is it?
Yes, for the recording.
So it's best you get a mic.
I just want to ask, the stealing of the clothes from the gopis. I've read the pastime several times, but lately I didn't read it, because there is always the idea in my mind of a little sexual agitation. So should we read it or should we not?
Should we read it or should we not? We should read it. Srila Prabhupada, discussing this in one lecture about discussing intimate pastimes of the gopis that to us may appear sexual, he said, don't be foolish. If you feel you're becoming agitated, then leave it.
Okay.
That's the answer. But we should know it also, of course. And we should also know how to... People will ask about this. It's still a well-known pastime of Krishna. It's more famous than his killing Shakatasura, for instance. People will. A few years ago, on the front page of one magazine in India, it was an English magazine, I can't remember which one it was, there was a picture, a painting that had been put on the cover, of a woman sitting on a tree with men coming before her naked. And it was talking about how the liberated women of India are now free in their sexual relationships and more or less glorifying that. So you can understand that that pastime of Krishna is still well known enough that they could make a parody of it, to put the modern Indian woman in the position of the enjoyer. Rascals. Complete rascals. They want to glorify this. So people may ask us about this. What would you say if someone says, how can God, the Christians, they'll preach like this? What kind of God is this who steals women's clothes? What will you say? Yeah, you can be asked about it as much as anyone else.
Your wife belongs to Krishna.
Your wife belongs to Krishna.
That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada also said that. He said that Krishna is criticized for having so many wives. But if Prabhupada said that if a man thinks he has one wife, Krishna is not immoral, but if you think I have one wife, you are immoral. Because actually she belongs to Krishna. You're being adulterous. So what would you say? Well, mostly people who challenge like this, they're not prepared to listen to anything, but then there are others who are affected by them and said, oh, really? Oh, why? They're not challenging, but they're confused. So, two minutes left. Anyone want to make a suggestion? I can think what to say. I should. Yeah, what would you say? Your hand is up. You want to answer that? You want to ask another question? Well, one point that Srila Prabhupada often made is that great acharyas, who themselves are completely clean in the matter of female association, Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's no question of any impropriety, in sexual impropriety. They all glorified Krishna. And they were not only religious, they were very deep philosophers. And they established Krishna to be the supreme. So first, take this into account. First, consider this. That's the first point to consider. Then we have to consider what is the nature of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. The difference between mundane lust and spiritual love, what we are attracted to in this world, the mundane attraction between male and female, that is a perverse reflection of the spiritual love which is manifested in what appears to us to be sexual activity. It is sexual activity, but it is completely pure. And that can be fully understood by those who are pure. So like this we can do. We can. But we have to be ready also. We can't just edit it out of our lives. We can't edit Krishna's pastimes as some books are produced. Stories of Krishna without those stories. Yeah, you had a question, please. Please, can get the mic over there. Time's up. Aaron says, please. It doesn't say you must. Yeah. No, I was referring to someone with a name beginning with Ch.
And you had mentioned that they are Shakti, and that they're all expansions of Madhumanarani.
Yeah.
They're also Jiva Tattva.
Oh, Jiva Tattva and Shakti Tattva. Is he going to ask about this?
Yeah, how is that possible?
Well, I must admit, I don't know. It's a tough one. It doesn't seem that there's any of our acharyas have clearly delineated. Practically, the jivas, they are in the spiritual sit. Jiva is tatastha shakti. They can be in the external or the internal. When they go into the internal, they become or they are the antaranga shakti. In the spiritual world, there's only it's all spiritual. And in the material world, the jiva, although he is by nature spiritual, he acts as if he's material. But there are some who don't ever, there's no question of Radharani falling down or like this. So, it's something which it appears our acharyas, they haven't very much elaborated on it. Yeah, so. Yeah, another question, yeah. We're all Shakti of Krishna. We're all... Yeah.
And Lord Chaitanya is also very most wonderful, is also said. So my question is, when all this is said, does Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allow his devotees to chant the holy name Hare Krishna Mahaprabhu?
What is that? Lord Chaitanya allows his devotees?
Offensive devotees.
Unallows? What does it? What does it mean? What's the question? What's that? What? Clarify what? I can't understand what the question is. I'm sorry, I can't understand what the question is.
Does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not allow offensive people to chant the holy name?
Does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu not allow offensive? Well, he warns against it, but he doesn't stop it, doesn't physically stop it. I can't really understand the question. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns against offensive chanting. Nirapaade naam loile pai prema dhan. You don't get love of Krishna if you chant with offenses. But he doesn't stop anyone. You mean his aparad is mentioned directly and Naam aparad is mentioned directly in Chaitanya Charitamrita, if that's your question. I'm sorry. What's your mother tongue? What's your mother tongue?
Telugu.
Telugu. Oh, well. I don't understand Telugu. You could say it in Hindi if you know Hindi. I might understand it better. Okay, let's leave it there. Okay.
When this passing took place, when Krishna's age was 8, and all the gopis were maybe less than that, so why these people don't have a common sense at the age of 8, what kind of sexual...
Why don't they have common sense? It's Yoga Maya Samavrita, Mudha is the answer.
Thank you. This is the answer. So, because they are ignorant, they don't understand the power of...
Yeah, it's ignorant, but it's willing ignorance. Ignorance, you may just not know, but if you want to be ignorant, then who can enlighten you?
Thank you.
Okay, Hare Krishna.